This is the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast with Nathan Tuescher, where I discuss clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics topics from the perspective of drug development scientists. One of the comical aspects of working in clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics is learning all of the abbreviations that we use in our work. For example, a sentence such as this is not uncommon. Did you finish the PPK model by fitting the BLQs with M3 and then plotting PRED versus DV and CWRES versus TAD? That was one sentence with seven abbreviations. Sometimes when my wife overhears a conversation between myself and a colleague, she comments that it sounds like I'm speaking a foreign language. And I think she's right sometimes. Today I want to talk about a variety of modeling methods that we refer to using abbreviations, of course. Those are QSP, PBPK, POPPK, and PKPD. All of these are methods for analyzing data to predict either drug concentrations or a response variable. But each method is developed in a different way and has different assumptions and limitations. Most people, including myself, may have expertise in one or two methods, but only a passing familiarity with the others. As I continue to develop my expertise in clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics, I am finding that I need more experience in all of these to understand how to best apply them to solve the problem at hand. Think of each of these methods as a distinct tool that is available to help you answer questions about the pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics of a drug you're developing. These tools have overlapping functions, but each has its strengths and weaknesses that you'll want to know before you use them. I'll discuss each one along with my perception of the strengths and weaknesses of each, and then I'll summarize my final thoughts at the end. Quantitative Systems Pharmacology, or QSP, is the first method that I'm going to discuss. This is called a bottom-up method because it is built based on a system of biological relationships between receptors, transporters, and their ligands and substrates. In essence, QSP is a method of building a large building using lots of little Lego pieces. Each piece contributes a small amount, but when placed together in a specific pattern, it can be a functional building. These systems utilize mathematical relationships that can be explored through experimentation. You can utilize binding kinetic experimental data, membrane transport data, signal transduction pathways, genomic distribution data, proteomic information, and much more to create a system of interrelated processes that describe a larger relationship between a drug's biological action and a pharmacologic response. A QSP model intends to show how changes in a pharmacologic system, changes a biomarker or response variable that may be related to efficacy or safety. These systems give insight into what might happen if you perturb a system at different points. Where are their feedback mechanisms? Which pathway is critical for the regulation of a specific biomarker? How can we modify the system to restore normal pharmacologic function? All of these are questions that can be answered using QSP models. These models have been used to identify new drug targets, identify novel pathways for drug intervention, and optimization of drug product potency. Thus, QSP is very useful during all stages of drug development, especially when you have information on the pharmacologic pathways of interest for your disease and/or drug therapy. The challenge with QSP resides in the complexity of the models. In essence, these models attempt to recreate the entire underlying biological system involved in the pharmacologic process related to the disease or therapy. This means that there may be hundreds or even thousands of interrelated mathematical expressions that need parameter estimates to allow the system to provide predictions. Most of these parameters are determined using in vitro experiments that can isolate the pharmacologic interaction and provide solid data. At times, these experiments are conducted by laboratories that are building the QSP models, and at other times, the values are taken from literature information conducted by other scientists. Because there are so many relationships and values, the impact of errors in these parameters can have a massive effect on these models. Thus, the quality, accuracy, and precision of model parameter estimates is an extremely important part of the QSP models. In addition, the models must be calibrated to real data. Changes in biomarker levels with known treatments or with animals or patients with a specific deficiency are used as a comparison to the QSP model predictions to ensure that the model accurately reflects the observations. In most cases, the QSP model is not actually fit to the observed data. Rather, the QSP model simulates the response, and the simulated response is compared to the observed response. Adjustment in the QSP model parameters are then made in an attempt to minimize differences between simulated values and observed values. This might be considered similar to tuning a piano with tuning forks. The wires on a piano are adjusted until the tone from a specific key on the piano matches the tone from a set of reference tuning forks. The QSP models can be highly sensitive to misspecification in the underlying systems, either by incorrect relationships or inaccurate parameter estimates. In many cases, it is impossible to fully isolate pharmacologic systems using in vitro methods, which can cause these misspecifications. In addition, there are likely compensatory mechanisms that exist in vivo that we cannot observe through our experimental testing. Thus, we may on occasion miss specific interactions completely in our system of equations. All of these things can lead to erroneous predictions, particularly when we start evaluating the impact of inhibiting or stimulating various parts of the biological system. Despite these challenges, QSP models can provide insights related to repurposing drugs for many new indications. This was a major effort during the COVID-19 pandemic by many researchers who identified potential agents that entered clinical trials. QSP models can be used to evaluate innovative targets for specific diseases or conditions that can lead to the development of new molecules for future development. And these QSP models can also be instrumental in predicting results in special populations like pediatric patients by incorporating ontogeny to the pharmacologic systems. Overall, QSP is a very valuable tool for the exploration of efficacy or safety markers and/or endpoints. The work is computationally intensive and generally requires time and resources to build out the system of equations to be used. And these QSP models tend to be tuned to observed data rather than fit to data using statistical approaches. Physiologic-based pharmacokinetic models, or PBPK, is the second bottom-up method of analysis. However, PBPK models differ significantly from QSP models. PBPK models include a system of equations, but those equations are not related to efficacy or safety markers. Instead, these equations focus on describing the processes involved in the absorption, distribution, metabolism, and elimination of drug products. As an example, the absorption process includes many steps that might include dissolution from the dosage form into the contents of the stomach, movement into the small intestine, permeability across the gut wall, transporter interactions that may increase uptake or increase efflux back to the lumen of the gut, first pass effects through the liver, and much more. These systems of equations are designed to evaluate how different chemical structures interact with the various metabolic enzymes, transporters, and membranes. The goal is to have a set of equations that describe the pharmacokinetics of any drug that is administered to a human subject. Often, PBPK models are segmented to describe a single process rather than the entirety of the pharmacokinetics of a compound. For example, there may be oral absorption models, topical dermatologic models, subcutaneous injection absorption models, and topical ocular absorption models. Each of these models is calibrated using experimental data with a variety of drug compounds. As the amount of information for each model increases, the accuracy of predictions generally increases as well. PBPK models also require significant amounts of in vitro experimentation to ensure accurate results. Isolated experiments are conducted to determine the interrelated processes that govern the pharmacokinetics of compounds. This information is then augmented through experimental pharmacokinetic results in animals and humans. Similar to QSP models, the PBPK model can be tuned so that the predictions match the observations. This tuning process is performed iteratively as new data becomes available, creating a broader base for predictions. As I described for QSP, the bottom-up approach for PBPK can be highly sensitive to model misspecification or inaccurate parameter estimates. However, PBPK models can mitigate those risks through experimental tuning in many cases. PBPK models also require vast amounts of information and data on both prior compounds as well as new compounds that you want to evaluate. If you want to understand the absorption of a drug, you will likely need more than just a chemical structure. You will need solubility information, dissolution information, and much more to generate an accurate prediction. These in vitro experiments are often less expensive than running multiple in vivo studies. However, it still takes time and money to generate the required information. Some of the biggest impacts of PBPK have been in the area of exploring drug interactions. When clinical drug interactions are identified during drug development, additional information is usually needed to assess the impact of less potent inhibitors or inducers. This is an area where PBPK shines. Consider a drug that shows a significant increase in exposure when co-administered with a strong CYP3A4 inhibitor, which requires a dose reduction. Now we want to know what impact a mild or moderate CYP3A4 inhibitor might have. Using PBPK, we can calibrate the model with the known in vitro and in vivo effects for the strong inhibitor, and then predict the in vivo effects for the mild and moderate inhibitors. These results could then inform the need for a dose adjustment in those situations without conducting an additional clinical study, thereby saving quite a bit of time and money. Another application for drug interaction evaluations with PBPK includes assessing interactions with drugs in special populations when administration to healthy volunteers is not possible. PBPK has also been used to conduct virtual bioequivalence studies, estimate human exposure from animal data, predict absorption profiles from new formulations, and much more. The reusability of PBPK models across compounds and diseases is an enormous advantage because these models grow ever more accurate with each additional set of data. Pharmacokinetic, pharmacodynamic, or PK/PD models can be considered similar to QSP, but they use a top-down approach. Like QSP models, PK/PD models predict either efficacy or safety response information. However, there are significant differences in how the models are constructed and how they are used. PK/PD models are considered top-down because they start with the observed PK and PD data, and then they use that data to develop a mathematical model that describes the observed data profile. These models are empirical, but can have some mechanistic components. For example, the model may incorporate an Emax model structure to describe the relationship between concentrations and response. However, things such as compartments do not have a specific physiologic meaning. A variety of model structures and approaches are evaluated by fitting the data to the model and estimating a set of model parameters. This model fitting process generally follows a minimization or optimization algorithm that selects the best set of model parameters to predict the observed data given the specific mathematical model used. As a simple analogy, if you have a set of data points with XY coordinates, you can fit the data to a line and estimate the slope and intercept parameters. You could also fit that same data to a polynomial equation and estimate parameters for the polynomial. The selection of the most appropriate model includes evaluation of the goodness of fit plots, precision of parameter estimates, and the purpose for the model. In essence, you can have multiple models that fit the data equally well, but you choose one model over the other based on how you plan to use that model. PK/PD models are designed with a specific sequential process in mind. Administration of a drug results in increases in drug concentrations in the body. The increases in drug concentration lead to changes in the pharmacodynamic endpoint. The idea of concentration response is the cornerstone of PK/PD modeling. This means that you must have some type of pharmacokinetic or drug exposure model to perform PK/PD modeling. The interaction between the drug concentrations and the pharmacodynamic system are normally divided into two different approaches. The first approach is called a direct effect. This means that the drug concentration measured in the body is directly related to the pharmacodynamic effect. If your PK follows plasma concentrations, then a direct effect model assumes that the plasma drug concentrations are directly related to the pharmacodynamic response. If you have whole blood or tissue or cerebral spinal fluid concentrations and a direct effect model, that means that those concentration values that you measure are directly related to the response. These direct effect models are the least common type of modeling in PK/PD, but they are the easiest for interpretation of the biological meaning of the estimated parameters. For example, in a direct effect model, a parameter like EC50 would represent the plasma concentration that results in 50% maximal pharmacodynamic effect. So you know exactly what you're measuring and you know what you need it to get the effect that you want. The more common and more complicated type of PK/PD model goes by two names, indirect effect or effect compartment. Each of those names is associated with a specific mathematical implementation of the same principle. In these models, the observed pharmacodynamic effect is directly related to a concentration that cannot be measured, but that concentration is correlated in some way to the measured concentration. As a simple example, consider a drug for treating neurological symptoms. We can measure the plasma levels of the drug, but we suspect that it is the brain levels of the drug that will be related to the pharmacodynamic response. We know that higher plasma levels will lead to higher brain levels, but the time course for changes in brain levels is unknown to us. Thus, the plasma levels are indirectly related to the pharmacodynamic response. This is where the first name comes from. The second name is based on the idea that there is some compartment within the body that is directly related to the pharmacodynamic response, and we call that the effect compartment. The effect compartment gets its drug from the systemic circulation, so the plasma levels affect the concentration in the effect compartment, and the effect compartment concentrations cause the pharmacodynamic effect. That is the second definition, or that is the definition of the second method, which is called the effect compartment method. In both cases, there is a separation between what we measure for PK and what drug concentrations cause the PD effect. Some researchers believe that the indirect response model approach is more mechanistic or biologically accurate, but both modeling approaches can yield quality results. The interpretation of the PD parameters with these models is a bit more difficult because things like an EC50 represent the effect compartment concentration that causes 50% maximal PD effect. But we don't measure the effect compartment concentrations in real life, so the number is a bit of a mathematical construct rather than a biological system parameter. Similarly, parameters like rate of production or rate of elimination for indirect response models are difficult to interpret. The complexity of a PK/PD model is based on the information content of the data used to create the model. Sparse data, narrow dose ranges, and small number of subjects often result in very simple PK/PD models, and a lack of data can result in the models that miss real biological events that are only observed in future clinical trials. Furthermore, a PK/PD model may not translate from one species to another, or even from one patient population to another. Because these models are built from observed data, they can only describe what exists in the available data. This limits the ability of these models to extrapolate outside of their original data sets in many situations. Thus, questions like, will this oncology agent work with a new tumor type, are difficult to answer with PK/PD models, but may be answerable with a QSP model. In contrast, a question like, would a different dosing regimen provide adequate response, can be answered very easily with a PK/PD model, but could be more challenging with a QSP model. PK/PD models tend to be less computationally demanding than QSP models, and they can be constructed with less data overall. However, the quality of the PK/PD model often depends on the breadth of data available to build the model, particularly when looking at the dose range or range of exposure levels for which you have pharmacodynamic responses. So the last type of model that I'm going to talk about is the one that most people are familiar with. So population PK models are one of the oldest and most well-known types of models. These models were being developed in the early 1980s in an attempt to address specific issues related to therapeutic drug monitoring with sparse sample collection. Similar to PK/PD models, PopPK models are a top-down approach to modeling. You start with observed pharmacokinetic data at the top and then build a model that will describe that data. The best fit model is normally the simplest model that captures all of the observed variability and nuances of the concentration time profiles. Population PK models generally have some standard pieces that include a structural model, a residual error model, between subject variability terms, and covariates. I'll describe each one of these briefly. The structural model includes appropriate absorption, distribution, and elimination processes for the specific route of administration and pharmacokinetic characteristics of the drugs. Examples include 1, 2, and 3 compartment models, first order absorption, transit compartments for absorption, saturable absorption, nonlinear or Michaelis-Menten kinetics, or target-mediated drug disposition. These models are designed to capture the profile of the concentration time curve from dose administration through elimination. The residual error model is a random error term with a mean of 0 that measures the difference between each predicted concentration and the matching observed concentration. The minimization process attempts to minimize these errors as much as possible. The between subject variability terms are associated with structural model parameters such as volume and clearance. These random error terms are used to define the difference between the typical parameter value and the specific parameter value for a single individual. In essence, there will be a distribution of individual clearance values in the population with a standard deviation that is estimated in the modeling process. Finally, covariates are pieces of known information such as demographics or baseline laboratory values for each individual that may impact one or more structural parameters. For example, men may have larger volume of distribution than women. Thus, biological sex would be a covariate on volume. Population PK models are constrained by the available data that is used in the analysis. One common problem people run into is trying to implement complicated absorption models when there are only a few data points prior to Cmax available in the dataset. Thus, nearly any absorption model can be fit to the data, and it's impossible to understand the nuances of the absorption process from population PK. Or perhaps you want to evaluate the impact of kidney function on clearance, but all of your subjects have estimated glomerular filtration rates in the normal category. With population PK, you can only identify factors that impact the PK when you have data across a wide range of those variables. Population PK is very good at combining rich and sparse data together in a single model. It's very useful for identifying covariates that impact PK parameters, and it is effective for extrapolation from adults to pediatric subjects down to approximately 2 years of age. But the value of PopPK is limited by the quantity and quality of data that you've collected in your clinical studies and that you include in your analysis. In summary, today I discussed 4 different modeling approaches that are commonly used today in clinical pharmacology projects. Those are QSP, or quantitative systems pharmacology, PBPK, or physiologic-based pharmacokinetic models, PKPD, or pharmacokinetic pharmacodynamic models, and lastly, population PK models. Both QSP and PBPK models use the ground-up approach where you start with biological systems and processes and construct a complete model of either the pharmacodynamic marker for QSP or the body's ability to distribute and metabolize drugs for PBPK. These methods rely on many in vitro experiments to define parameters and then are calibrated to observe data. In contrast, PKPD and population PK models use the top-down approach where observed data is fit to mathematical models to find the best fit model for the data at hand. These models are data dependent and generally empirical, but they can incorporate standard structures that have been useful in the past. All four of these modeling approaches are useful in different situations, and there will always be some overlap among them. For example, extrapolation from adults to pediatrics can be done using a population PK approach or using a PBPK approach. But extrapolation below 2 years of age is more effective when you use a PBPK approach because it's easier to incorporate ontogeny of different enzymes and transporters in PBPK than it is in population PK. No one method is better than all the others, and I don't believe any of these methods will go extinct in the next 10 years. So in conclusion, I hope I've helped explain some of the abbreviation soup associated with modeling and that you now have a little bit better perspective on how these different approaches can help you during your current clinical pharmacology or pharmacometrics projects. So thanks again for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday season. For more information, please connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email to nathan@tushersolutions.com, or sign up for my newsletter at tushersolutions.com/newsletter. The newsletter is a copy of the show notes sent to your email each time an episode is released. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to the show. Thank you.